Yeah, just to back up, I mean, probably a lot of people are quite familiar with the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, but just if you're not, no problem. I'll just orient us a little bit more. It's basically where the Buddha gave mindfulness instructions, and the four foundations are the body, which includes the breath, feeling tones, which means noticing, oh, I like it, I don't like it, or I'm spacing out, I'm not paying attention to it at all. That's we're doing all the time, reacting to our experience. And then mindfulness of mind is the third foundation, and the fourth is mindfulness of dharmas or mind objects. It's sometimes translated, but it's helpful ways to deconstruct what our minds are really doing, and help us to see reality instead of the creations that our minds make. I guess it's a fair way to say what the dharmas are, what the fourth foundation is. Like the opening to the fourth foundation of to the four foundations of mindfulness, say the promise is that it's a direct path. This is a quote: for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha or suffering and discontent, and for acquiring the true method for the realization of nirvana or nibbana. So yeah, boy, what an advertisement, right? Like, I especially whenever I hear the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, I'm like, I want that. That one just somehow, those words, I just really feel them when I hear them. But yeah, the disappearance of suffering and discontent, this is like quite an advertisement that he puts out here at the beginning. Yeah, the first foundation, the body and breath practices. There are six different body practices, and the first one is breath. And then I wanted to drill us down a little bit into a couple of the practices that are not at all. I mean, they're not meant to be done on the cushion. They're meant to be done in our lives. And in fact, the mindfulness of breath practice is the only one that says to go do it in seclusion. To go sit down and shut your eyes. Here, this is the quote: here, gone to the forest or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut. He, sorry, these say he over and over again. That's the way it is. He sits down, having folded his legs crosswise, set his body erect, and establishing mindfulness in front of him. Mindfulness he breathes in, mindful he breathes out. So, yeah, when I went back and looked and realized, wow, it's really the only instruction about the body that's a sitting on your cushion meditation. And it's not meant to only be on the cushion, right? We can be mindful of our breath, like what Michelle was just bringing. Like, when you're running around in your life, you can be mindful of the breath anytime. It can be a really good focus to choose. Say, hey, I'm going to spend a month and try to focus on my breath while I'm running around in my life as much as I can. You can. It's very portable. But so the rest of the instructions for body, yeah, I've just been just having, I'm talking about it because I've been having more of an awakening for myself about, like, I really had the idea for a long, long time that the real practice was sitting on the cushion, that's where you'd get the main benefit. And as I've read some more, especially Venerable Inalio, who translated the Satipatthana and wrote commentary on it, he's one of the most important commentators, contemporary commentators in our lineage. In as he's writing about, like he looks across at a lot of different translations and a lot of things that came from a lot of different Buddhist countries to see what the variations are among the ways these things were written about the Buddha's words. And in the Chan and Zen ones, the ones that come from the Mahayana traditions, the ones that come from China and Japan, the order is switched. Like in the way that it is written in our lineage, the breath comes first, and then the next two things are postures and activities, which are totally, I mean, yes, you have to pay attention to your posture when you get into sitting meditation, or whichever posture you're doing it in. But these are meant to be practiced in our lives. And the Mahayana versions have it switched so that the postures and the activities come before the meditation. Like that's the order of teaching these things. And personally, when I realized that a few years ago reading this, I was like, wow, I did a Buddhist martial arts practice very ardently in my 20s and 30s, and I do like Tai Chi and Qigong now in my older body. But I realized, oh, we were totally doing that. We were being aware of our own bodies and other people's bodies in different postures and different activities. And it's a very charged way to wake up and be mindful when you're doing those kinds of practices. And we never got any formal like sutta instruction or anything like that. I've been reflecting back on, oh, I was gaining those kinds of in life mindful. I was doing those kinds of in life mindfulness practices, not really understanding how they were Buddhist. But anyway, the Zen way of talking about these things too, I think, is very common. We've all heard, like, if you want to wake up, like, sweep the walk, chop the wood, carry the water, cook the meal. With like the Japanese tea ceremony being like a very, very mindful engagement in making and serving and drinking tea, just kind of takes those activities to a new height. But it's very common in those lineages of Buddhism to hear those kinds of things. And Venerable Anālya was saying, he thinks it's a good thing to practice in that order, to make your awareness of postures and activities as an important a thing to you as you think of the sitting. So it just opens up such a whole huge world full of what practice is and what it like. I've kind of rewired my brain, like foreground, background, like switched to a little bit about like the continuity of practice that I was reading from the Utejaniya quote at the beginning, to be continuously aware. That the benefit of that is huge. The instructions for being mindful of posture, it says when walking, he knows I am walking. When standing, he knows I'm standing. When sitting down, he knows I'm sitting down. When lying down, he knows I'm lying down. So even the instructions for the posture are a guidance from a more active state to a quieter state, like a meditative state. And there's a lot made of how available all this is in going to sleep and waking up every day. How available it is to consider postures. It's a practice I've been trying to do my best with. I'm often like in the kitchen, got the tea kettle on already, and go, oh, right, I got out of bed. I went from lying down to sitting to standing, and I got in the kitchen, I walked, and okay. So you might just try, let's just try this for like 30 seconds, just to imagine for yourself, like you're getting ready to go to sleep at night. You've done all you need to do, and you're walking into wherever your bed is. You're walking in. You're standing in front of the bed, and you're probably sitting down, and you're probably lying down. And then you have your night's sleep, however that goes. And in the morning, you wake up, however, whatever wakes you up, however you wake up, and you're lying down. And then however long it takes you, if you had maybe leisurely or long to get into seated, to get up onto your feet into standing, and start to walk. So, yeah, it has the other benefit of if you go to sleep mindfully, if you're aware when you're lying down that you're lying down, you will sleep better. It's one of the promises. So just once you get into the lying posture, just feeling the release of the body toward the earth with each breath out is, yeah, a practice that I just find so valuable for so many reasons. And especially if you've practiced that a lot, and then the times you don't feel well, it's a very friendly place to be to surrender to the earth. Posture really, really matters when you don't feel good. That's one just very predictable place to practice. And in terms of the postures, there's also the walking meditation is part of that. So that is a more active, it goes beyond being a posture, it seems to me. But just the movement between postures, and then especially the walking, just seeing each step begin, middle, end, just feeling all of that is such a teacher of change. Just watching change happen, watching it unfold in this body that's always with us. And then activities. I'll just read how it's said in the Satipatthana Sutta. He acts clearly knowing when looking ahead and looking away, when flexing and extending his limbs, when wearing his robes and carrying his outer robe and bowl. So the monastics for whom this stuff was originally, the instructions were originally given to the monastics, they didn't sit around. They didn't stay in, right? They went out every day and went on alms round with their outer robe and their bowls. So they had these activities where they were, and where it was intended for them to be mindful while they were doing those. So anyway, probably we don't go out with an outer robe and a bowl, but we have lots of outer activities. Okay, and then when eating, drinking, consuming food and tasting, when defecating and urinating, when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent. And that's certainly not a complete list of our activities in the day, but it's the ones that we know will be pretty predictable for all of us. So I just have to say this. I made a practice for a while of everything to do with urinating and defecating, if you don't mind me saying, because I realized there's a whole lot of emotional stuff that goes with, like, the urge. And am I in a convenient place? And, like all of these things about it that cause a lot of unnecessary stress. I was finding. So for a while, I made it my practice to, like, anytime I was starting to notice, oh, there's that urge to really be present with everything that was happening for me about that. Not. I didn't keep it up ongoing, but it's like it would be any time a good one to return to. I actually got clued into it by helping a guy that had cerebral palsy that couldn't go into the bathroom by himself and was waiting until he could find some stranger who was going to help him. It was when it really occurred to me that it's a big deal, it's a big deal for all of us. There's lots of Anyway, I won't flesh that out any further, but
Thank you for mentioning that. That's beautiful. What beautiful practice. Awesome. Thank you. I never thought of that.
I didn't see who that was. Oh, Isabel, huh? Yeah.
It's kind of like ringing the bell, and it brings you back.
Yeah, like it's happening all day every day that our body's doing things that can that's a great way to put it, that our body is ringing mindfulness bells and just knowing the predictable ones, like and maybe picking a couple, that are like, hey, yeah, I think I'll pay attention here or there. But yeah, somebody was mentioning before, I think about how much mindfulness of the body is an anchor, a refuge, like to not be stuck in our spinning thoughts about everything. So being present in the doing of something rather than what we most often do is like wanting to be at the end of the thing we're doing, or the effect we are trying to have from the thing we're doing rather than being in the actual motion itself. Yeah, and that's just available everywhere. I found during COVID, at the beginning, during the lockdown, and how everybody had a lot of anxieties that we hadn't had before, and I just realized, oh, every time I have a thing to do, that's a physical activity, that's a mundane physical activity. It's like, oh, great. Oh, good. I've got a refuge. I know it's a really good thing to brush my teeth right now. And I can just feel my gums. Like, if, I really got at a deeper level what a refuge mindfulness of the body can be. Just letting ourselves feel those activities. Yeah, and then just some of the things that can happen, how it might unfold from paying attention to these things. It's like we think that being, or I should say, I had the wrong impression that being able to train my mind to come back from distraction was something I did in seated meditation. But in fact, like you can be training that all the time, and it's like every time we do it out in our lives too, it's taming the mind's tendency to get distracted. So practicing these ways in our lives can affect when we sit back down again. It's drop by drop, right? It's not like it's just all easy tomorrow or something because we paid attention today. But yeah, it's just that we can use our daily lives to encourage being able to have more collectedness, more concentration when we're sitting, and the goodies that come from that feeling of being, of having concentration. Yeah, and then being aware of postures and movements, how we're doing them too, just the interrelation between how our body is being held or how it's moving and our mental state. So if I'm like this, right, that's like you kind of have a sense of how, how I might be feeling and if I'm like this, right? It's like these things impact each other. So just seeing that non-separation of mind and body happens from witnessing how our emotions and our mental states are affected by how we're holding our bodies, whether we're in a hurry and just all of those things are available for us to see. Yeah, and then there's lots of things available to do in order to smooth out our nervous systems, like lots of, like doing yoga or doing qigong, are ways to smooth out those kinks in our nervous system that get, can make our mind feel much calmer, make we can kind of go back and think about whatever we were trying to figure out with a more creative outlook than if we were trying to muscle our way through something. And then of course the mindfulness of our activities also means like it's guarding our own karma, right? Because each activity we do has an impact. It has an impact on us, and it has an impact on the world. Some have, next to no impact, and some have big impact, but it's how we form our activities or how we form our habits, how we form our karma. So I don't know the quote exactly, but wherever we incline our mind, that's what it becomes, right? So whatever activities we do, that's what we those are the activities we're conditioning ourselves to do. So, it becomes very, very obvious and essential when dealing with addictive problems and things like that. But yeah, that just that's there's the involvement in deep involvement in an activity, in the sensory experiences of an activity. But I don't want to be doing that with an entire tub of ice cream, right? I'm really mindful. I want to have like, oh, right, I'm aware of this activity done to a certain extent is going to have certain, its causes and conditions. I don't want those causes and conditions. So by being actually, sober in the moment about what I am doing, not just the feeling of it, is another really important part of mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of our activities. Another quote from Utteswaran: "When you get up from sitting, does it follow you?" So just another really great time. And, again, I remember sometimes and not others, but when I sit in the morning, where whatever my chosen focus has been, whether it's my breath, it's my body, it's hearing, whatever I felt like I got some traction with in that sit, or whatever I chose to pay attention to during that sit, then okay, I'm going to go do some activity from here. I'm going to go stretch, do my PT exercises, or I'm going to go make a cup of tea or whatever. I make the intention to carry that, the kind of focus, the object of my focus, to carry that into the activity when I've kind of already got it up and going. So yeah, whether it's washing the dishes, whatever. I mean, if you, I'm sure there's lots of wonderful stuff out there to help with this, but Thich Nhat Hanh's book, Peace is Every Step, is just full of that, full of how to bring mindfulness into those daily experiences. But yeah, the ease of doing it from sitting into action. There are times when I remember to take advantage of that, to really make good use of that, and there are times when it kind of falls away, but just another place to look. One of my teachers, Shinzen Young, talks about motion challenge sequences, that you develop them yourself. So whatever it is you're practicing with, pretty much like I just described, whatever your focus area is, that you carry that focus into various levels of challenge in your life. So if I've been meditating and then I go do Qigong, it's like really pretty easy to stay mindful while I'm doing Qigong. It's a little harder when I get on a phone call with somebody related to work, any athlete, anybody training any kind of artistic skill or whatever, just the repetition in doable challenges, right? So you build, you don't try to jump into the deep end of the pool first. You find a challenge sequence for yourself. Can I stay mindful of my breath while I make this cup of tea? And then it's possible to systematically build that from there. The remembering to be systematic is, I need to remind myself of this. That's why I'm saying it aloud. But that it can really like turbocharge your practice to find little ways you can build and bring it more and more, that it becomes easier to do because you've been practicing in a way that wasn't, that wasn't too hard for you, that was the appropriate level of practice. There's the three other parts of the instructions for the mindfulness of the body. So we've been talking about the breath, postures, and activities, or possibly in the other order of postures, activities, breath. And the other three, I'm not going to go into them, just to mention them, but they're also just always available with this body that we have everywhere we go. Let's see, which order do they go in? I think 32 parts of the body is the next mindfulness of the body practice. And there's a specific parts that are named. And there's, you can practice with paying attention with those lists of the 32 parts of the body. There's ways to practice with that. I feel like any way that we become aware of what's on the inside, right? What's on the inside of these bodies for real? And anybody who studies anything that's yoga teacher training, medical training, sports training, like anybody who studies things about the body and comes to really learn and understand, oh, that's me, right? Like, I've got this enormous liver right here on my right side and it's all crammed in there. Wow. I mean, we don't walk around knowing that those kinds of things about ourselves. So, I mean, I feel like for all these things, you get credit for everything that you do in your life that helps you understand you're in a body, and that there's all this other stuff that we don't generally see that's on the inside, like what that really is. The training in general is just geared toward undoing the charm of attractiveness and undoing the ew of, like in the list of the 32 parts is all those icky substances in our bodies, right? To undo the ooh about that and get, not be so attached to, oh, look, they're my type, they're hot, whatever. Like to look at these things in a very matter-of-fact way is one of the intents, especially for monks and nuns who were being celibate to be like, yeah, okay, just body parts, would be helpful if you're a young man and you ordained and took vows of celibacy. So anyway, that's the 32 parts, the four elements, earth, fire, water, air, like just every time you take a breath, it's the air element, just the warmth of your skin. We've always got the fire element as long as we're alive. The moisture in our mouths is the water element, and just the feeling of solidity is the body. And then outside, every time the wind blows through the leaves and they wiggle, it's the air element. That just that the sun came up and we can see is the fire element. It's these things are just everywhere around us all the time, and it all counts, right? It's mindfulness. Anytime you go, oh, air element, and you get that moment of, you see the wiggle in the leaves or whatever, you get the moment of contact, and then you let yourself deepen in, you let yourself soak into it. Like, all of those things count. They all add up. Yeah, and the last one being the mindfulness of death, Maranasati. This, again, it's a very, like the 32 parts, it's like, a very prescribed thing about how you would go to charnel grounds where they used to not bury people, but just have them out on the ground in various stages of decomposing, and to go look at those bodies and to say, I am not different from this. This will happen to me. Well, we don't have charnel grounds to go to. And, again, I feel like any way you interact with sickness, old age, and death, you be around people, you deal with your own, the things that aren't going the way you want them to in your body. Like any time you see, this is the reality, this is what we all live with, of course, extra points for going and doing hospice work or, some place where you come in contact with these things more, but just showing up for a memorial or, just, or looking at anatomy books. I don't know if anybody remembers, there was a thing some years ago, they had a show of it at the Masonic Auditorium called The Body Within. That was like, they were actual bodies, but all the systems, does anybody know what I'm talking about? All the systems in the bodies had been done with plasticine, because I'm seeing some head nods. So you got to see, like, life size, like actual, all these parts of the body. Anyway, I just feel like and these were people who had given their bodies for this and were gone. They were dead, but their bodies were still there in this vibrant, amazing way. Anyway, I feel like, what's available to us is available to us for pondering these things or not shying away from them and saying, yes, this is going to happen to me as well, to this body, right? That's the last one. Just any way we turn toward that, like all of these things add up to this like enormous thing called mindfulness of the body, that promises to be the direct path for purifications of being, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, and for acquiring nirvana. that's what I have to say about mindfulness of the body in out in our lives.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.